You are Locked On Pistons, your daily Detroit Pistons podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What is happening and welcome to the Locked On Pistons podcast, your episode for Friday, January 11th, heading into the weekend as well, and another beatdown, this time by the Sacramento Kings, which sounds bad, and that's bad. And this is your boy, Matt Shook, the host of the Locked On Pistons podcast, a sports writer here in the Motor City, covering the NBA for the Associated Press and the Detroit News, a Pistons fan and follower my whole life, and a sports newspaper reporter for over a decade as well. Thanks for the listen. Thanks for spreading the good vibes and also the good word of the Locked On Pistons podcast. We appreciate that. Today we're going to give the details. We got to do it. Pass along the particulars from the loss on Thursday night in Sacramento to the Kings. We're also going to talk about Blake Griffin's return on Saturday night. First time he's playing in Staples Center against the Los Angeles Clippers. Not the first time he's played in Staples Center. That was the other night. And not the first time he played against the Clippers. That was last season. But the first time in Staples Center against the LA Clippers. Maybe you've heard about that. Later, we're going to go on to more into the nuts and bolts about Saturday's game, the matchup with the Clippers. A couple familiar faces, as we know, in Clipperland these days. But give me a follow on Twitter, by the way, at Matt_Shook, S-C-H-O-C-H, another underscore. After that, also the Locked On Pistons Twitter account. And check us out on Facebook at Locked On Pistons-Matt Shook. Rating and review on iTunes always helps as well. But on Thursday night in Sactown, a good crowd, by the way. They panned the arena a few times. You know, Kings, Pistons, can't imagine that that would get a lot of people out, but it certainly did in Sacramento. Of course, we know that it's a team that's struggled so much over the years, and for them to be up near 500, up near the Western Conference playoff race, maybe that's something that's got those fan base energized. So good to see for them, I suppose. But Pistons lose 112-102 to Dave Yeager and the Kings. This season continues to go directly into the toilet for the Pistons. The team falls to 17-23, a new low watermark of the year at six games under 500. The fourth straight loss for the Pistons, who have lost seven of their last eight and now 16 of their last 20. So 4-16 in their last 20 games. The team is now 1-5 in 2019 and 0-2 to start this four-game West Coast trip. Sounds great, huh? And it sounds crazy to be talking about the standings, but there is a reason. The other teams in the East are going through swoons as well. Pistons in the ninth spot in the East still. Haven't been passed by Orlando. Still a half game ahead of 10th place Orlando. And the Pistons still just two games out of the eighth spot in the playoffs in the Eastern Conference, and still just three games out of the sixth spot in the Eastern Conference in Miami. Gotta love that Eastern Conference. It's the gift that keeps on giving. But Blake Griffin sat out. We know about that. The second game of the season that he did not play, both times those were on a back-to-back. The last time the Pistons had kind of an inspired effort in a loss at Philly. And to be honest, I kind of expected the same thing on Thursday night. A team whose pride has been kicked so many times lately that they'd give a really good effort. I didn't expect a win without Blake, but I thought they'd try and they thought they'd fight and maybe even get a win, but especially at least keep it close against a Sacramento Kings team that certainly isn't unbeatable or anything like that. Well, they did not. The Pistons did not give an inspired effort, but some new faces on top of the score sheet, which is notable. Maybe nice to see in some of these instances. 16 points for Stanley Johnson to lead the way in the loss. The first time this year that he has led the team in scoring. Pretty good effort from him defensively, doing some things for the Pistons there. 15 apiece for Reggie Bullock and Bruce Brown, a new career high for the rookie Bruce Brown, who continues to show that he'll be a big part of this future for the Detroit Pistons. 12-11 for Andre Drummond, who was bad again. Empty stats, all that stuff. We say it every game. Another game where I watched him against the other team's center, and I said, yeah, you know, I'd rather have the other guy. I'd rather have Willie Cauley-Stein. And that seems to happen a lot lately, pretty much every game. Kyrie Thomas played really well on the bench. He had 8 points, knocked down a couple threes. Would like to see him get some more run the rest of the season, especially if the team trades someone from the wing. I'm looking at Reggie Bullock there, a trade that I hope for and expect to happen. Not that I want Bullock gone, I say this every day, but just because he has good trade value to teams. Pistons, more. Again, he's going to hurt to lose. He's going to hurt your team this season. There's no doubt about that. But the Pistons taking advantage of the fact that you have an asset that can get you more value in the future than he can give to you this year, whether as a player for the last 20 games or so, or as just $2.5 million of cap relief. That's not enough to justify not pulling the trigger on a trade that could give you a nice draft pick or a nice, you know, like a rookie piece that someone's kind of given up on, a young piece like that. Just something that could possibly help out in the future. Bullock, by the way, was 3 for 6 from 3 on Thursday. That's a good thing, good stuff there. But still at just 39.1% for the season from 3. Really wanted to get up to 40% in these next few weeks. Give teams a nice round number. 39.1, best on the team for the Pistons of qualified players, obviously, duh. But tied for 32nd in the league. Want him to climb a little bit over these next few weeks. Get up to that 40%, get into that top 20, top 15, top 25 in the league, and now we're talking about trade value there. For Sacramento, Buddy Hield leads the way with 18 points. Those guys all pretty much played, you know, 20 or 30 minutes. Everyone sat out at the end of this game because it was such a big blowout against the freaking Sacramento Kings. But the Kings are now back to 500, only two games out of the Eastern Conference playoffs themselves. Look, I knew going into this game, obviously, Sacramento is better positioned going forward with some young talent like Hield and De'Aaron Fox and Marvin Bagley. And I like Harry Giles, Willie Cauley-Stein. I mean, these are good players that are young and going forward. Bogdanovich, too. And deep down, if I was being honest with myself, I knew that this team was probably better right now, especially with Blake out, obviously. But to see them be significantly better right now than Detroit, I would say was a shock. I would say that it was disheartening as a Pistons fan. And if you needed more evidence that, you know, the run for the eighth spot or getting to the playoffs or whatever, it's becoming less, more and more meaningless as time goes on, especially to the diehards. And that's all that's left right now is the diehards. I don't think an eighth seed, the eighth spot, attracts enough casual fans back into the fold to be as significant as showing the diehards that you have a real plan for the future. So again, you know, inching closer to team tank basically, but certainly team sell. Been on team sell for a long time now, and continue to be that way. Pistons now 2-3 this season on the second half of back-to-back games. Also notably, Luke Kennard gets into it with the coaches after he gets pulled out of the game after making a defensive mistake. I'm not concerned about this single instance in and of itself. It's nice to see some fire, and I think Dwayne Casey said that after the game himself. Things happen throughout the course of an NBA season and on the bench. But I think that I share, and I know that a lot of you guys probably share Luke's frustration here. Why is he always the example? Why is he, and the same thing with Stan Van Gundy last year, why are they yanking just Luke Kennard off the court after defensive lapses? We watch this team. Every single player on this roster has defensive lapses sometimes. It's to me, and I understand he's an important, valuable piece going forward, and he's a second-year guy, and he struggles defensively. So there's a reason you want to drill these principles into this guy in particular. Hopefully he's a long NBA career, hopefully a long career in the red, white, and blue for the Pistons. But it's getting a little old. As a guy who, I think that giving him more minutes and letting him make mistakes at this point of his career with this team in particular is more important than showing him up and taking him out. Let this guy fall into a rhythm offensively. Work on the things that you need to work on defensively. But, geez, I'm sick of it. I hope you guys are too. Dwayne Casey, again, so many guys. I mean, Andre, how many times do we need to have Andre Drummond be asleep throughout the whole first quarter and continue to play? I mean, why is he exempt from getting yanked out of the game like Luke Kennard seems to have been many times throughout his NBA career? Anyway, Pistons playing the Clippers in L.A. on Saturday at 3:30 p.m. More about that, plenty more about that one on today's show. Then the four-game road trip, West Coast trip, wraps up on Monday night against Utah. That's, I believe, an 8 o'clock game, so not like a super late one like the Lakers in Sacramento. We can get back into a normal sleep schedule here. But then the Pistons, by the way, are home for three against all next week. Orlando, Miami, and Sacramento. Sacramento, again, being the second of a back-to-back Friday and Saturday there after the Miami game. So Orlando, Miami, Sacramento at home to close next week. And after that four-game homestand at Washington. So after this four-game roadie, you got a three-game homestand, sorry, and then at Washington. So after this road trip is over on Monday against Utah, and it's probably an 0-4 road trip. Then a three-game homestand with winnable games, and at Washington on the road after that. So four winnable games after this four-game, like I said, probably all losses road trip at this point. So hope is there. The fact that they will hopefully be able to turn it around very soon is a possibility down the road. But up next, we're going to talk about Blake Griffin's return to Staples Center against the Clippers on Saturday afternoon. Maybe you've heard about that. But the Locked On Podcast Network, we're doing unprecedented things on Twitter and Instagram. Give us a follow on both of those channels. The handles for both of them are Locked On NBA Net. So make sure you do that. A lot of good stuff on those social media channels here on the Locked On Podcast Network. Yes, sir! Later on in the show, we're going to go deep into the game against the Clippers on Saturday. All the details you need to know heading into the 3:30 start. But first, Blake Griffin. We know that's the huge storyline going into the game, 3:30 p.m. on Saturday afternoon. Blake Griffin returning against his former team for the first time. Now, he's played the Clippers before. He's played in Staples Center before, but this will be the first time that he's playing the Clippers in Staples Center. So we know he played seven full seasons and was into his eighth season with the Clippers before he was traded, was actually drafted the year before his rookie season as he missed his entire rookie year after suffering the knee injury in the preseason. Number one pick out of Oklahoma. The second all-time in points for the LA Clippers franchise, and I dished this out on Twitter this afternoon as I taped this on Friday, trailing only Randy Smith as the all-time points leader in Clippers history. The former Tigers GM, Randy Smith, not him actually, but another Randy Smith. But interesting, as I was kind of going through those numbers, the top 10 all-time scoring leaders in Clippers history, five of them have played for the Pistons at some point in their career. Obviously, Blake Griffin being number one on that list of guys who have played on both teams in their scoring outputs for the Clippers. So Blake Griffin is number two on the all-time scoring leaders for the Clippers. He has also played for the Pistons, as we know. Number three, Bob McAdoo, is the third all-time leading scorer in Clippers history. He also played for the Pistons in the 70s as well. Not long. I believe it was just about a season and a half or something like that. Number five on the Clippers' all-time scoring list, also played for the Pistons, Corey Maggette, a former Piston who was involved in the Ben Gordon trade as well with the Charlotte Hornets. And number seven on the all-time Clippers scoring list, and all these guys obviously are more affiliated with the Clippers at this point than their Pistons career. They just kind of got a cup of coffee with the Pistons. I just thought it was interesting that five of those guys ended up on the Pistons. Number seven is a guy who is very known as a Clipper, known as a Kansas Jayhawk as well, and many people, even big Pistons fans, don't remember that he had a cup of coffee with the Pistons, and that's Danny Manning, who I believe is still coaching at Wake Forest, if I'm not mistaken there. And number nine on the LA Clippers scoring list is a former Michigan Wolverine as well and former Detroit Piston, and that is Loy Vaught. So five of the all-time leading all five of the top nine Clippers and all-time leading scorers also played for the Pistons. So strange coincidence there. And really kind of says something about maybe the Clippers organization that they had. We know that they're a folly of follies in NBA history. And they've put it together lately, and a lot of that is because of Blake Griffin. And they signed him to the five-year, $173 million deal last offseason, had the jersey retirement ceremony for the free agent to, the fake one that they did privately to entice him to come back and be a Clipper for life and all that good stuff. So for him to, he had the knee injury last year, was out about a month after having a really strong start to the season, but then got hurt again. And the Clippers were going under a little bit of a restructuring. They had Jerry West as an advisor there, Lawrence Frank involved as, I believe, the president of basketball operations, the former Pistons coach there. So a little bit of a restructuring under owner Steve Ballmer, another Michigan guy as well, by the way. So a lot of ties here with these franchises, as we talked about, a lot of ties with the Lakers this week as well. So those LA franchises are dotted with Michigan ties, Pistons ties, all that good stuff. But so the Clippers trying to, and I read an article by the Athletic of Jovan there who visited Little Caesars Arena and the Pistons about a week or so in December. I met him at one of the games and he was working on this piece for the Athletic. And one of the things that stood out was the Clippers really didn't think that they could realistically be moving on from the Blake Griffin deal until maybe this trade deadline or maybe this upcoming offseason. But when the Pistons were quote-unquote big game hunting with owner Tom Gores looking for a splash, the Clippers were kind of surprised about the interest that the Pistons had in Blake Griffin at that point. And Lawrence Frank and Jerry West and Steve Ballmer were the guys that were tougher to convince about this deal to be made. But when they started the negotiations, and it lasted about 9 or 10 days between the two teams, the Clippers zeroed in on wanting Tobias Harris and a largely unprotected first-round pick, which is ultimately ended up as part of the deal for Blake Griffin. Some other pieces were thrown in as well. And really, if you look at those other pieces, it's interesting to look at just those components of the trade, really the three main components of the trade, obviously. Blake Griffin going to the Pistons for Tobias Harris and a largely unprotected first-round pick, only with the lottery protections of those first few years that didn't end up mattering because the Pistons did not win the lottery last year. You look at the other pieces that were thrown in, Bryce Williams, Willie Reed, and then the Pistons giving up Boban Marjanovic and Avery Bradley. I would say that all those other components, the Pistons were the ones that scored best in whatever ended up coming back to them. And by that, I mean the biggest piece of all those assets that were moved was Boban, and Boban being a negative asset. So the Pistons giving him up was probably the biggest thing that benefited them in terms of the spare parts of this trade, so to speak. But certainly that probably makes sense because Tobias Harris and a first-round pick are a nice collection of assets for the Pistons to give up and for the Clippers to receive. So it needed to balance out a little bit. And even though Avery Bradley was an expiring deal, I think that the Pistons getting out of that Boban contract was a valuable piece for them in that trade that maybe gets overshadowed a little bit and should by the bigger components with Blake Griffin and Tobias Harris in that first-round pick. But as you remember, when Blake Griffin gets traded, he says he found out on Twitter, texted all of his teammates and said, "It's been fun. Talk to you guys later." And he said his phone blew up after that. He tweeted a GIF of the Fresh Prince looking surprised. We all remember that from that late January day. I believe it was a Monday. Funny going back and looking at the Locked On Pistons podcast. They had lost that over that weekend and just got pummeled again. And I did a Monday morning show, and it was like one of the more depressing Pistons, Locked On Pistons shows that I ever did. I was like, this team is wandering, they're going nowhere. And then they make that deal. So I think it was kind of foretold a little bit. If you're an everyday listener, you might have had a feeling that something was coming, and I kind of did too. I think I even said it on that show that something might be coming. It feels like this Pistons team is lost, really, as it is right now. And I know that it's a little bit more difficult for the Pistons to make a deal right now, given that they don't have things like Tobias Harris to trade that might be wanted by other teams. But Blake Griffin now looking forward for the Pistons, turning 30 in March, so a couple months away from his 30th birthday. And as we remember, the Pistons ended up hosting the Clippers less than a week after that trade on a Friday night. ESPN showed that one. Avery Bradley and Blake Griffin got into a little bit of scuffle that game. But the wounds are a little bit too fresh, as I think both sides talked about in the Athletic article that I read today about that. But like we said, Blake, Bryce Johnson, and Willie Reed, who's playing well with the Salt Lake City G League team. I saw one of the guys on Pistons Twitter was tweeting how they'd like to still have Willie Reed. But of course, the off-field incident or the off-court incident and the domestic violence thing about him was probably more the reason that the Pistons released him than anything else. But Tobias Harris, Avery Bradley, Boban Marjanovic, and a first-round pick go back to the Clippers in the deal. The first-round pick actually ended up being Miles Bridges, but the Clippers traded up one spot up to the Charlotte Hornets for Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, who's been a really nice point guard for them from Kentucky. And so the Clippers had to attach, along with the Miles Bridges pick, they had to attach a couple second-round picks to move up to Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. So, the pick ends up being ultimately Miles Bridges, but that you make a trade and you move up to Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. And it looks a lot different, of course, when you look at that, because Miles Bridges is a little bit disappointing this year. You don't really see him having a great NBA career. The Michigan State product will certainly be a usable piece for many years, you'd think, especially if the jumper comes around and all that stuff. But Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is really a guy who looks like it could be an impact player for a long time. But that wasn't technically the pick that was involved in the trade. So a little bit two vastly different ways of looking at one asset that was exchanged in that pick. It's worked out for the Clippers. They're playing pretty well really early on in the season, falling off a little bit lately. I don't expect them to be a factor in the Western Conference playoffs if they make it or anything like that. If you ask me right now, I say they're not going to make it, by the way, but maybe that's me being a little bit of a Clipper hater. But going forward, they do have $71 million in cap space. Some of that most likely will be eaten up by a multi-year maximum extension for Tobias Harris, who's going to be an unrestricted free agent this year, and definitely enough for another max guy and some other pieces as well. You know, you always got the Kawhi Leonard wanting to come home, rumors, Kevin Durant even rumored to the Clippers a little bit, so some big possible moves coming for the Clippers this offseason. The question is, has the move worked out for the Pistons? Well, in the short term, certainly not. This is a team that's in the toilet right now. But we'll see. I mean, I think you have the franchise centerpiece that you can work with in Blake Griffin. You have him for three more seasons, which is a good thing. And I know it's a lot of money, but he's going to be 32 by the end of it. Tough to have patience given that the clock is ticking on Blake Griffin's prime, as we know. But the big moves for the Pistons right now otherwise just don't seem to be feasible unless you want to swallow a little bit of a tough pill. If you want to clear out Andre, clear out Reggie Jackson. Again, we talked about Andre and me wanting the other center in a lot of these matchups all season. You look at the point guard matchup for the Pistons, it seems like I'd rather have the other point guard most nights, pretty much all nights, really. And that's not a good place to be for your supposed big three when you look at the other two and of that big three and say, man, I'd rather have the other guy across the court than him. I think you keep making calls on Andre Drummond. You make him available in all kinds of trade talks, see if there's any teams interested. But I think you might have to wait out his deal as well. Maybe even towards the end of it, at least until he becomes an expiring type of contract in another year. And I don't see attaching assets to Reggie Jackson at this point being a good answer either. And I'll say this about Reggie Jackson, by the way, looking more healthy lately. He had the nice dunk down the lane against Sacramento last night. 9 dunks this season equal to last two seasons combined for him. And I think he's looking healthier. I think he's looking a lot better. And with the strong end to this season, he could be an expiring piece that you could move this summer. I think teams and the Pistons, by the way, could see him not just as that expiring piece, but a guy who has some value as a player for you going into next season. And for the Pistons, hopefully that's more of a scorer off the bench. The team will be thin depth-wise, but maybe put the ball in his hands with the second unit a little bit. I know it's tough to pay a guy as the leader of your second unit $18 million, but that's just the reality of it for the Pistons right now. Maybe they either draft or come up with a better young starting point guard this offseason and kind of relegate Reggie Jackson to bench unit type of player. But more about Blake. I mean, you expect a video tribute on Saturday from the Clippers, a big applause. I mean, that was a franchise in the garbage until he came in, turned it into Lob City. Chris Paul comes over, Doc Rivers comes over, and now they're a real team that's looking ahead to the future and has some worthy pieces and reasons for the Pistons to, or for the Clippers to be optimistic. The question is, should Pistons fans be optimistic? That's the question that we tussle with every day here on Locked On Pistons. But up next, more about the Clippers game in particular, this team and this game, as it's an important one for both of the franchises who are right in the middle, right in the mix of that playoff hunt. So some game details you need to know. That's next here on the Locked On Pistons podcast, which is a proud member of the Locked On Network, your team every day. Moving on to Saturday, the Pistons, a 3:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time game against the Clippers on Saturday afternoon. So that'll be an early one. What's that, 12:30 p.m.? On Saturday for LA, so a little bit of a strange tip-off time. Might expect some rust early on for those guys after maybe, especially the road team being in LA on a Friday night. But hopefully the Pistons, with all their struggles, are a little bit professional about this and are really ready to go on Saturday against the Clippers, who are 24-17 on the season, 14-6 at home. Certainly the Pistons, big underdogs in this one. 8-point dogs, by the way, as I look it up. But the Clippers coming in winners of three out of four, their last four games, had a three-game win streak snapped at Denver on Thursday. Right now, as I tape this on Friday afternoon, tied for the fifth seed in the Western Conference playoffs with the San Antonio Spurs. It's a jumbled mess there, so not like there's a lot of separation between all the teams and really the top 10, 11, 12 in the playoffs right now. Right now, as I look at it, Utah is the ninth team outside of the playoffs, and I think they get in as a playoff team in the West. And right now, Utah is 3.5 games behind the Clippers. And of the eight teams in the currently sitting in the playoff standings for the West right now, I think the Clippers are the most likely to fall out. So that's my prediction. I think Utah ends up in, the Clippers end up out. But again, I'm kind of a Clipper hater here, so maybe I'm not the best guy to judge these kind of things on. But one guy that you can't hate, especially if you're a Pistons fan, is Tobias Harris, who has been excellent. The former Piston, career high 42.7% from three, career high 21 points a game, career high 8 rebounds a game. Noticing a trend here. Quite a contract year for Tobias Harris. And I don't say that with snark. I don't say that as a way to kind of poke fun of him. I just, not that he's like in a 1 year of great shape or something like that. I expect Tobias to be very good in this league for a very long time. I just wonder how valuable he looks a year from now with a max contract attached to him. But that's a good problem to have all in all for the Clippers or whoever's paying that money to him. If Tobias was still in the East, he's a no-brainer all-star. Right now, he'd be the best player on the Pistons without Blake Griffin, certainly, no doubt about that. And but in the West, he's more of a fringe all-star guy. My guess is he probably doesn't get in, but then maybe with an injury or two, he does get in the West. But maybe he does get in right away, and we'll see how that voting and everything shakes down in the next few weeks. But at 26 years old, he's a star, no doubt about it. And really, he would be a great guy to pair with Blake Griffin if you were the Pistons. But a coveted guy throughout the league, no doubt about it. But at least we're not sitting here like Milwaukee and Orlando, who gave up on Tobias for pretty much nothing. At least the Pistons got Blake in return for him. Other guys in the trade, by the way, Boban getting about 10 minutes a game, 7-4 right now for the Clippers. Every once in a while has some big moments or big stretches, but the story remains largely the same with him. He can be an effective bench player in spurts, but can't really be more than that. Can't be a regular, reliable option as your backup center like Stan Van Gundy might have thought when he gave him the 3-year, $21 million offer sheet from the San Antonio Spurs a few years back. Avery Bradley, what did Brad Stevens and Danny Ainge know? His game continues to fall off a complete cliff for the Clippers. He's getting 7.5 points per game, shooting 29% from three. With the Clippers, including a few games last year, he's shooting 27.8% from three after the deal. He picked up a 2-year, $25 million deal this offseason, one that the Clippers are no doubt regretting right now. He scores out as one of the worst players in the NBA in some of the advanced net metrics. So rough times for Avery Bradley with the Clippers so far this season. But as we mentioned, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, a 20-year-old rookie out of Kentucky, getting 9 points per game in 26 minutes. Danilo Gallinari, one of the best three-point shooters in the NBA at 44.9%, just sizzling from three. The 30-year-old getting 19.5 points per game, so a sharpshooter that you got to get out on. Montrezl Harrell, a guy that I've always liked, a guy who's getting his due around the NBA circles these days off the bench, getting 15.7 points per game. He's the kind of guy that the Pistons would love to have. He's the kind of guy that Pistons fans would love to have. And Lou Williams, one of the best bench scorers in the NBA, getting 18.5 points per game last year, sixth man of the year, I believe, if I recall correctly. Pat Beverly's a good player. Marcin Gortat's a good role player for these guys. So, you know, some real good players up and down the roster. Certainly not a title contender or anything like that, but Doc Rivers and the front office figure out what pieces they have this year that can be paired with whatever they're looking for in the future. So the future's bright with the Clippers. There is no doubt about that, and the Pistons will get a firsthand look of that this coming Saturday. But this is your host, Matt Shook, saying thanks for listening to the Locked On Pistons podcast. Enjoy the weekend. Enjoy the game against the Clippers. Try to. Anyway, as Blake Griffin gets his due from his former team, and we will see how that all shakes down. And we'll be back next week with some recaps of this one. We'll look ahead to Utah, and we'll try to get through this season and through the trade deadline and what's going to happen with your Detroit Pistons going forward. But thanks for listening, everyone. Have a good weekend.